Blog Talk Radio.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is. Why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell. So you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself? You get what you need.
You know, that is the million-dollar question. You've heard me say it over and over and over again. That sexual addiction has to do with obsessive-compulsive behavior that you decide that you want to change. Now, you may go, well, I don't really know if it's obsessive or compulsive. Well, guess what? If you're listening to this show, it is. Or if you've said hundreds of times before, I want to stop, and you couldn't, it is. If it is making your loved one or loved ones angry, upset, sad, hurt, then it is. If it's caused irreparable damage to your work, to your finances, to your own self-esteem, it is. Hi there, I'm Carol the Coach, and we had scheduled Bill Burkaw. Bill and Ginger Burkaw are phenomenal authors, and they had a new book coming out, and they had to cancel tonight. So we're going to get them rescheduled, but tonight I'm going to be talking about the basics. Again, what is sexual addiction? You know, I get so many people that email me and they say, I'm too scared to call the show. I don't want anybody hearing me. Now, I've got over 130 downloads. I'm sorry, 130,000 downloads a week. That means people are downloading the show and opening them. Well, now, I got to tell you, people are not listening to this show unless they, too, think they have a problem. And the chances that they would know who you are is absolutely astronomical. But if you get worried about that, I get it. If you're not worried, I want you to get a pencil and a paper, and I want you to jot down this number, especially tonight since I'm going to be with you for the full hour talking about sexual addiction. That number you can call and ask me any question you like is 646-595-3284. Again, the number is 646-595-3284. But in the meantime, if you're just too nervous about breaking your voice anonymity, you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com. You can go to my website, Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and get information through the website and contact me there. Or you can go to my other website. It's plain old carolthecoach.com. You know, I'm a psychotherapist of 34 years now. You know, every year goes by and I go, what is it? I don't even remember how long I've been married. So, well, I do. It's almost 14 years. But clearly, it's important for you to be able to access whatever you need to get the help that you deserve. So I can't emphasize enough, call me at the show, send me an email. As a matter of fact, I got an email just this week, and I talked to this man and said, hey, why don't you call me? And he said, oh, I don't think I can do it. He actually had said that he listens to the podcast version of the radio show, and he gets it from iTunes. He's a sex addict, and he's married, and he's been working on his recovery since 2004. So he's got a decade in to recovery. And he loves the podcast because they're informational. He said, my situation is complex, but that's life, right? Sometimes it feels like my wife is an ally in recovery. And then sometimes she can be the biggest obstacle. It is hard to gain a positive sense of self and to imagine a positive sexuality with her. Sometimes it feels helpless. Well, I'm going to stop right there before I continue on because, you know, most of the men I meet feel this way, actually, and the women I meet who have sex addict partners who are men. You see, partners have been so wounded and in so much pain that, yes, sometimes they're very supportive. They want you to get the help that you need. But other times they're so scared, they're so fed up, that they contribute and contaminate to the problem. And I always say in a relationship, you got to ask yourself, do I contribute in a healthy way to my partner, or do I contaminate the relationship? And, you know, in any relationship, sex addict aside, we all contribute and contaminate. I mean, just this weekend, I disputed what my husband said about 5 times. And at one point he looks at me and he goes, are you going to argue with me about everything, Carol? Well, in an emotionally mature relationship, you take that and you chew on it. And I thought, you know, I have been disputing him a lot. I'm going to have to work on that. The next morning, there were 2 things that we had disagreed on. I didn't feel like I was arguing, but I had definitely disagreed with him. And I was wrong. And I always say, when you're in a marriage or in a relationship, you need to be able to say 4 things, and I do mean in this order. You say, I'm sorry. You were right. I was wrong. Please forgive me. And then you tag it with, and I love you. Now, I got up in the morning, and it was something as simple as I told him that my college had never had graduations on Saturday. They always have graduations on Mother's Day. Well, I was absolutely right. However, he was talking about Indiana University, and I graduated with my master's from Indianapolis, Indiana University. So I was referencing that. He was referencing IU. And as with most couples, we had a communication breakdown and didn't even know it. So I'm arguing with him. He's arguing with me about things that we both absolutely know are right. And we were. To be the bigger person, you have to be able to say, you know what, honey? I am so sorry. I misunderstood you, and I was definitely in the wrong. You were referencing IU. I was referencing IUPUI, and you were right. Now, that takes an emotionally healthy person. So when this man says to me, Carol, sometimes my wife feels like she is an ally in my recovery, but sometimes she feels like she is the biggest obstacle to me in my recovery, I get what that means. And then he said, again, it's hard to gain a positive sense of self and to imagine a positive sexuality with her. Well, I can definitely understand that when you have sexual addiction in your background, normal, healthy sex is going to be tough. Probably it's going to be tough for at least the first year out of the 5-year recovery process. And that's what I want you to remember, is that sexual addiction recovery takes 3 to 5 years before the brain has readjusted, before relationships are safe and secure. So, you know, he's been in recovery 10 years, but who knows how long she's been in recovery, and who knows how long they've been in recovery together. He says, we've been married 32 and a half years. In my eyes, I love her, but in her eyes, I am neither cute nor handsome. I have worked on myself, and I've lost over 100 pounds. And I still have another 30 to shed. I'm healthier, I'm stronger, and I'm fitter than I have been for many years. But in my active years of addiction, I devastated her heart. He says, you know, after 10 years of recovery, I can see and feel the progress. I have changed in so many ways. All the worst behaviors are gone, but she seems stuck. The rage that she flares at me is terrifying. She has no idea how her words cut and how her disdain crushes me. Well, I have to agree. Again, I'm going to compare you with normal couples. The number one thing that a man wants is to be appreciated and admired. And women are horrendously horrible at, and I own this too, we criticize, we correct our mates, and we send them messages because they're not relationship-oriented that they're not good enough. But if you really were to ask your wife or your partner, hey, do you think I'm good enough? They would say yes. Even in normal relationships, they would say yes. Now, granted, if this is a sexual addiction relationship, they may be so wounded that they couldn't say yes. And they couldn't say yes because they are still in that process of saying, hey, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up to be betrayed, to be belittled, and to be affected to the degree that I've been affected. Now, I guess what he says next is important, because he says he knows that they're going to survive as a couple. Their youngest graduates in 2016, and that will be right before their 40th anniversary. He says he's still sleeping at a friend's house to get some rest and heal his heart. It's a relief to wake up and not be on edge and afraid. They are separated, but only in part by physical geography, in that they still see each other regularly. He says, you know, I told her how I feel, angry and hurt because she wakes me up at 5 a.m. with shouting and shaming. She can't apologize. She's just expressing her feelings. She's hurt. She's wanting me to know. He says, I'll keep learning and listening and recovering, but I'm not sure that getting emotionally healthy is going to enable me to endure being married much longer. Now, I would say that nobody should be abused. But at the same time, he and his wife, after 32 and a half years of marriage, need to get into couples therapy. And he did not indicate that he had been in couples therapy. And so that means that's the next step for them. And I cannot emphasize enough, you've heard me say this before, that in dealing with the wounds that have been created by sexual addiction, it is absolutely imperative that they attempt to go to a certified sexual addictions therapist, somebody who gets this illness, that gets the disorder, that can help her to understand that there were so many things that he could not control. You know, that's what I will deal with, an angry, angry spouse, and she'll be furious. And she will be yelling, and she'll be screaming, and she'll be saying, and you hurt me when you did A and B and C and D. And I'll have to remind her, yes, that absolutely hurt. And I have a lot of partners that listen to this show, so they'll be able to relate to this. That absolutely hurt. But the bottom line was, until they got into some really strong recovery, their behavior was compulsive and it was obsessive and they couldn't help it. So if you're somebody who's listening to the show today and you're wondering what you need to do to get healthy, maybe you're fairly new in this process. Maybe this is the first time that you've listened to something to get and gain some help. I'm going to be talking about what sexual addiction is. And I want you to feel free to give me a call, 646-595-3284. Now, I must tell you that we call this disorder sexual addiction, but there's another name for it, and it's also called hypersexuality. And clinically, from a psychological standpoint, this disorder did not get into the diagnostic manual. So truly, from a diagnostic standpoint, it is not recognized. But people who have worked in this field for 5, 10, 15, 30 years, we know there are predictors of behavior. We know that there's significant pain. We can predict what's going to happen next because it is a progressive illness. So I'm going to talk to you about what is sexual addiction. You know, sexual addiction is defined as any sexually related behavior that is compulsive, that interferes with normal living, that causes severe stress on family, friends, loved ones, and a person's environment, be that at work, at home, or alone. And although I talked to you about it being called hypersexuality, it is also called sexual dependency or sexual compulsivity. By any name, it is a compulsive behavior that completely dominates the addict's life. So if you're a partner today and you're listening to this, I want to emphasize that this person is controlled by the disorder. And I know that's scary. And there are lots of people that could say, nothing can control you. But I'm telling you, without a whole host of resources, without a whole team of people, without any reading and literature, the addict and his or her loved one is not going to get healthy. You know, sexual addicts make sex a priority more important than family, friends, and work. It is a compulsive behavior that completely dominates the addict's life. And I'm here to tell you that the addict will have oftentimes, sometimes 100 times a day, said, I'm going to stop thinking about this. I'm going to stop objectifying women. I'm going to stop getting on the internet looking at pornography. I'm going to stop looking at Craigslist. And that lasts for 10 seconds, 10 minutes, maybe an hour. And then they're back at it. You see, sexual addiction becomes the organizing principle in the addict's life. It's more important than their kids, their wife, their work, their money, and their life. Now, I don't really mean what I just said, but I do. You see, sex addicts compartmentalize. And when they compartmentalize, they are able to take their family, their loved one, and they're able to put them in a box, put them away for a while, engage in their behavior, come back out, and then attend again to their family, friends, loved ones, and work. The problem is that just about the time they're enjoying dinner, just about the time they've tucked their kids in, just about the time they've finished their exercising, they are drawn to and compelled to go back to whatever the behavior was that was sexually addictive. And so many partners say, oh my goodness, I thought he loved me. He couldn't possibly love me and have visited prostitutes. He couldn't possibly have loved me and gone to Craigslist and checked out single sites. You know, that's not possible. Well, I get that. It's not possible because you are operating from a system that is not sexually addicted. You're operating from a relational system. Addicts are able to organize their life around the sexual addiction. Now, in sexual addiction, there is no single behavior pattern that defines it. There are a variety of behaviors that become unmanageable, and they may include the following. You know, it may be that your husband or wife has unmanageable behaviors like compulsive masturbation or compulsive heterosexual or homosexual relationships, pornography, prostitution, exhibitionism, voyeurism, indecent phone calls. They may molest. There may be incest. There may be rape. There could be violence. There could be anonymous touching. I mean, all these behaviors can constitute sexual addiction. And it gets to be very difficult to understand because 99.9% of the people that I work with are not rapists. They don't molest. There is no incest. They are acting out on themselves, and they are betraying their relationships. So I have to tell you, I don't have that much experience in violent crimes. Now, I do happen to have a lot of experience with sexual abuse because I ran a program long before I understood what sexual addiction is. And here's the sketchy part about that. Someone who rapes or who molests, is in an incestuous relationship, may not have a sexual addiction. They have a compulsion, but it is not considered that. Or they may. You know, that's what it takes a trained therapist to know if exploitive sex addiction is part of the arousal template. We'll talk more about that later. Because what I know to be true is that most people that are listening to the show, they don't suffer from that. Now, you know, even the healthiest forms of human sexual expression can turn into self-defeating behaviors when it becomes obsessive or compulsive. Again, when it interferes with normal functioning and the behavior cannot be controlled, it is considered sexual addiction. So what do sexual addicts look like? Well, right now, the literature indicates that the ratio is 3-1. 3-1 when it comes to males versus female. That's very similar to other addictions like alcoholism and compulsive gambling. Online sexual behavior, pornography, is 60-40. When we do our research, we find that 60% of online sexual behavior is men, 40% is women. We are seeing this sexually addictive behavior in all ages, all races, all cultures, and it matters not whether we're dealing with an 11-year-old or an 81-year-old. They're exhibiting many of the same behaviors. What we know about addiction is that for the disease to become progressive, you have to have had experiences for a certain amount of time. So a 12-year-old may exhibit sexually addictive behaviors, but we can't call him or her a sex addict. 87% of sex addicts report having other addictions, like gambling, like overspending, like eating, like drugs or alcohol. So what we know to be true is that when you treat one of the addictions, you have to treat them all. That's why a good assessment is absolutely mandatory. Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about the typical profile of a sex addict. But before I do, I'm going to take a commercial break. So get your paper and pencil together. Get your phone out. Get me put in your contacts. Carol the Coach. And again, our number is 646-595-3284. If you have questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them. You're listening to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. I'm Carol Jurgensen-Sheets, and I'll be back in a moment.
Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people. Every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach. Always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Now, I've got Russell on the line.
I'm 47 years old. I'm a truck driver. I'm married. I have a wife in San Francisco.
Okay.
I haven't been home in 6 months. My thing is, I don't know if I have a sex addiction or what the problem is, why do I want what I can't have? And as soon as I can have it, I don't want it anymore.
You're right on target when you say, I don't know if I have a sexual addiction. Well, guess what? Yes, you do. And you know what? That's my specialty, Russell, so you're at the right place. Continue.
I meet women online, and I'm in a different part of the country. I travel all 48 states, so I love sex.
I hear self-esteem issues. You never felt good enough, and you didn't feel like you were getting what you should have then, and you're reenacting that now. Do you want to change that about yourself?
All right. You are listening to Carol Jurgensen Sheets, and this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach, and I am specifically talking about sexual addictions. Let's call this the Sexual Addictions 101 program tonight. I'm giving you the basics so that if you have somebody that you love that you think has this issue, I want to be able to help you and make your life a little bit more understandable so that you can then get the proper help. Now, you heard me say you've got to go to a certified sexual addictions therapist. If you really want to get specialized help, and you can do that by going to www.sexhelp.com, putting in your country, your state, and your zip code, and finding out who are the closest specialists in your area. That's very, very important. And we were talking about what does the profile of a sex addict look like? I mean, it gets a little dicey, you know. And think about yourself if you know that you suffer from sexual addiction, or your partner if he or she suffers. Sex addicts come from families with addictions. So they're already dealing with addictions in their family. Typically, they come from rigid, disengaged, inflexible families. Now, rigid as opposed to permissive, you know. Rules are not just anything goes. More often than not, there are very strict rules. And family members aren't really close. They're disengaged. And they're inflexible. Abuse appears to be a contributing factor in that 72% of all addicts describe having experienced childhood physical abuse. 81% describe experiencing sexual abuse. And 97% say that they were emotionally abused by their parents. Now, this applies to all sexual addicts unless we're talking about one subtype. And that is sex addicts who are addicted to pornography but don't have or manifest any other sexual addictions. So I think that's interesting to note. You see, one of the things that we know is that when somebody has been physically, sexually, or emotionally abused, when you combine that with a sex history that includes early exposure to sex or unusual exposure to sex, you will set up a behavior whereby as that child gets older, whether that be in his or her teens, 20s, 30s, or as, you know, a full-fledged adult, they will reenact their trauma, the physical, sexual, or emotional abuse, by fusing it with sex. You know, maybe they'll be into bondage because they will have been tied up. Maybe their parents contained them. They had ADHD and their parents tied them to a chair. I have one client who was tied to all four bedposts to take a nap. I had one child who was spanked repeatedly for soiling his pants. He, as an adult, enacts that trauma by soiling his pants and being dominated by a dominatrix. And that is more than a fetish. It becomes a sexual addiction because it is the organizing principle in his life. Now, typically, the partner knows that something's wrong. You know, especially if the partner is a woman, they have that intuition that something's going on. They may have checked on the internet. They may have looked at a phone. I recently had a family that came in, and they were very, very, very concerned about their sister, who was married to a sex addict. And their sister had realized that her husband was with multiple partners. And there were hundreds of pornography websites on his computer. And there was lots and lots of sites like Dolly Madison and Craigslist, and whereby he was voyeuring, he was looking for the perfect woman to be with. And so it really became an issue in terms of the behavior was uncontrollable, unfaithful. And, you know, this woman was like, what did I do wrong? We have a good sex life. I love my husband. I thought he loved me. She didn't understand that this behavior was uncontrollable, that he had probably wanted to quit a million times before and just could not figure out how to do it because he didn't have the proper resources in place, and we're going to talk about what those are. You see, sex addicts hide, delude, and minimize the impact of their problems. They use defense mechanisms. And so it's so important for the therapist to know the right questions to ask, to get a really thorough sex history, and to just go down the line and ask about behaviors and then give something called the SDI, the Sexual Dependency Inventory Test. That test, depending on who administers it, can cost anywhere from $100 to $250. But it gives the client a broad range of information about their specific sexual addiction. It also helps them work on their behaviors. It gives them a somewhat of a workbook that's compiled based on their answers. And I have to tell you, Patrick Carnes, who is the founder of SAA, and he's the person that's trained all the certified sexual addictions therapists, he has developed this test. Being a psychologist, he has always been interested in testing. You know, it's important to not only compile documentation, but to have empirical research that substantiates what's normal and what isn't. And so he gets a certified sexual addictions therapist to administer the test so that he has information that can then help both the therapeutic community and the addicts themselves to get the proper guidance and guidelines. Now, I'm going to ask you, as you listen to this show, sex is almost always not discussed in childhood development. So who taught you about sex? And what did they teach you about sex? What were the mores? What were the norms? What were the emotional factors? I mean, they may have taught you some technical information, but what did they tell you? Wait until marriage? Sex is dirty? Don't touch your body? don't masturbate? I mean, what are the things that they taught you? Because I guarantee you, sex addicts were not given accurate information. All right, so it's important for you to be thinking about what is it? What information were you given as you were growing up? Now, I got to tell you, it's always important for us as therapists to assess what traumas you've experienced from your past. So some of the key elements that we need to learn in the first 2, 3, and 4 sessions are: what trauma did you have from the past? What multiple addictions do you have? Because we know that you do. What was your sexual history like? And that this work that we're going to be doing with you is not going to be accomplished in 12 to 15 sessions. This is long-term therapy. Probably minimum of 5 years, in addition to support groups and SAA. It's very important for you to realize that. Now let's look at some of the criteria that makes up a sex addict. Loss of control. This is the first criteria. Are you somebody who said, as I indicated earlier, hundreds of times before, that you were going to stop? That you knew the behavior was wrong? That it made you feel bad about yourself? That it wasn't healthy for your relationship? And yet you could not control it. Was it out of control? The second behavior is it compulsive? Is it all you think about? When your family goes out of town, are you secretly excited because it's going to give you time to act out? You're going to be able to, connect with prostitutes or women on Craigslist. You're going to be bringing home men or women and having sexual rendezvous or orgies. You're going to be able to get on the different websites and explore and experiment. Do you look forward to your children's games and make up excuses for why you can't go see them play softball, basketball, football, baseball, because you're actually more interested in having some downtime to pursue this compulsive behavior? Does that sound like you? Are you always making up excuses? Are you hiding your computer history? So loss of control and compulsive behavior. Have you noticed that it's getting worse and worse and worse? You know, what used to be a half hour is now 2, 3, 4 hours straight. Are you getting up in the middle of the night to get on these websites, to look at pornography, to make calls? Are there repeated efforts to stop? You heard me say this just earlier a couple times. Have you told yourself a million times, I'm not going to do this anymore? This is not how I want my life to be. And yet you can't stop. You can't make it go away. Is there loss of time, or what we call time distortion? Are significant amounts of time lost doing or recovering from the behavior? You know, I've talked to many a man who has absolutely had no sleep at all because they've been up all night, or they get to bed at 4 and then they end up being late to work because they can't get up until 10. They're exhausted. They're fatigued. They're unhappy because their life is out of control. Are you preoccupied? Is this the only thing you can think of? You know, the number one thing when I talk to clients that they say, if they're addicted to internet porn or to websites, they say, I want to know what's new. It's like, okay, they know that it is imperative for them to stay abreast of what is new. You know, they want to know who's the new girl, who's the new guy, what's the newest position, what's the newest apparel. They want to know what's new. And, of course, because this is the operating system by which they go by, they are always unable to meet their family and work obligations because their mind is on betrayal. Their mind is on the sexual addiction. Does that sound like you? Do you know that it's interfered in your life significantly? Could you call me right now at 646-595-3284, and would you be able to identify how this has stood as an obstacle in your life? Because we know that it has. We absolutely know that that's part of the addiction. In the very same way the drugs or alcohol can be an addiction. You know, people that do heroin or cocaine or crack, they say, I'm going to stop. This is not how I want to live my life. I love my wife. I love my kids. I don't want to do this. And then they do it all over again. Does it continue despite consequences? I cannot tell you the amount of people who have lost their job, lost their families, lost their homes, lost their self-respect, and are back at it days, weeks, and months later. This thing always progresses. It always gets worse. It always escalates. That's part of the addiction. And what I know to be true is that, you know, this is not the way you want your life to be, but it is the way your life is. Things have gotten worse and worse and worse. So, okay, there's efforts to stop. There's loss of time. There's preoccupation. There's inability to fulfill obligations, continuation despite consequences, escalation, lots of losses, and much withdrawal. And by withdrawal, I mean when one tries to stop, the preoccupation gets worse. Absolutely gets worse. And it interferes with sleep. People can't eat. They can't concentrate. They can't focus. They're shaking. They tremor. They perspire. Their heart races. You know, anybody who tells an addict who suffers from sexual addiction that there are no side effects, there are no withdrawal symptoms, they obviously haven't done their homework. Because an addict will tell you that their life absolutely feels out of control and they experience many physical withdrawal symptoms. You know, tell a man who is working on his sexual addiction that he needs to stop masturbating for a year. And see how he feels day 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. You know, I have a woman right now, And she sends pictures to 30, 40 people a day. She waits for their responses. She's addicted to sending the pictures, but more than that, she's addicted to the response. And when she doesn't get a response, she gets hypervigilant. She doesn't know what to do. Addiction cycle is dramatic. You know, what we look at when we're looking at a client who has this is we look at the belief system. And the belief system might be something like, I don't feel good enough. And then they have impaired thinking. And their impaired thinking might be, nobody appreciates me. I don't make a difference in life. I might as well just go ahead because it matters not what I do with my life. And then the addictive cycle really gets started, and there's preoccupation. For women, they oftentimes say the putting on their makeup starts that preoccupation. When they get out their red lipstick or they shave a certain way, and they do this every single time before they have sex with anonymous sex with a partner, they have created a ritual that becomes compulsive. They act out. They feel like their life's unmanageable. They then feel despair and, of course, shame and guilt. Now, we all know that shame is when you hate yourself, and guilt is when you know that what you're doing is wrong. Guilt is healthy because it helps you to realize that you have to change behaviors. But shame is about self-loathing. Shame says, I am the worst person in the world and I have no reason to care about myself. And when people feel shame, they oftentimes can't find the motivation to stop. To stop their behaviors. And when they can't figure out how to stop their behaviors worsen. Now, there are 10 types of sexual addiction. And these 10 types, we know are going to change. We're already seeing more than 10, but I'm going to go over the basic 10. And that is fantasy sex. There are some people that they act out sexually because they want to fantasize about how important they are, or they want to fantasize about how much they are loved or needed or desired. A lot of times men and women that look at porn are into fantasy sex. They're wishing that was them. They're actually believing that they could be, that could be them. Fantasy is a powerful mind drug. And, you know, in used in healthy ways, it can help you accomplish your goals and your dreams. And in an unhealthy way, it helps you create a reality that interferes with your sense of self. Seductive role sex. There are some people that aren't addicted to the sex. In actuality, they are addicted to seducing somebody. That's what gives them their charge and the adrenaline. The arousal is based on the conquest, and it diminishes rapidly once they have talked somebody into sex and had sex with them. The third type of sex is voyeuristic sex. That is visual arousal. The use of visual stimulation to escape into an obsessive trance where oftentimes there's something we call numbing that occurs. Voyeurs are obviously people that watch other people. You know, so many kids. I was talking to a man tonight, and he said, you know, I knew there was something really wrong with me because when I went to babysit, well, to dog sit, while my neighbors weren't home, I would go to the woman's dresser drawer, take out her underwear, masturbate, in the clothing, and when she returned home, I would watch her with binoculars and through windows and fantasize that she could see me doing the things that I had done. So that's voyeuristic sex. Exhibitionistic sex is attracting attention to your body or sexual parts of the body. We've all seen it. I know I was power walking one day, and this man goes, hey, I turned around. He was in a coat, and he flashed me. You know, got in his car and took off. His thrill was in posing himself and watching for my reaction. That was how he got off. His sexual arousal stemmed from the shock or interest level of somebody else. You've seen it happen before. Paying for sex. You know, there are some people, they want nothing to do with actual sexual relationships, but they do want to know that they're in total power and control by paying for sex. Their arousal is connected to payment for sex, and with time, the arousal actually becomes connected to the money itself. You know, they go to the bank to get out money. They begin to get aroused. And so that's another form of sex. Trading sex. You know, there are plenty of people that will sell or barter sex for power. Arousal is based on gaining control of others by using sex as leverage. I have a good friend who's a contractor. He's single. And when he found out what business I was in, he said, oh, I've got plenty of referrals for you. He said, you wouldn't believe how many housewives will have sex with me so that I will do special things for them in their home. And I'm not talking sexual things. That might be fixing a door or a windowsill or fixing a leaky faucet. That's what we call trading sex. Then there's intrusive sex, and obviously with intrusive sex, a boundary violation occurs without discovery. You know, you've probably seen on the news people that were arrested because they rubbed up against another person. They touched them without their permission. The actual subtitle of that is called frauderism. Anonymous sex. There are plenty of people that don't want to know their partners. They just want to have cold, hard sex and not have any of the relationship expectations. Pain exchange sex. Being humiliated or hurt as part of sexual arousal or sadistic hurting or degrading another sexually. Obviously, S&M would constitute as this type of sex. And exploitive sex, and that is exploitation of the vulnerable. Arousal patterns are based on target types of vulnerability. That is always has to do with molestation. Incest and sexual abuse. Well, it looks like we are almost done with the show. And now you've learned the 10 types of sex and the 10 factors that help to describe sexual addiction. Thank you so much for being a part of the show and educating yourself. Again, I want you to go to sexhelp.com and look for a therapist skilled in this profession, and you can always email me at carolthecoach@aol.com or go to my websites, Sex Help with Carol the Coach or carolthecoach.com. I so appreciate you listening, and I look forward to helping you with this issue. There is help out there, and hopefully each show focuses a little bit on what you can do to make your life different. As I say at the end of every show, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearless. Have the courage to be yourself. I'll see you next week. We care about you. Take care.